Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Franke.
I'm James Walton.
I'm Joyce Sturby.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
The Oregon City nighttime nailer has been, well, nailed. The man who is believed to have been terrorizing Oregon City roadways since 2017 was arrested early Tuesday morning. He's been identified as 56-year-old Oregon City resident Brett Michael Wilson and has been spreading large nails across various streets in the dead of night. The news was first broken by Oregon City Mayor Dan Holliday. Mayor Holliday did not identify Wilson, but confirmed the suspect, who has also been nicknamed the Nail Bandit, was in custody. In a press release later that day, Oregon City Police explained that Wilson was arrested after patrol officers saw him intentionally throwing nails from his vehicle onto South Center Street at approximately 5:37 a.m. In a quote, police said, "We have dubbed Mr. Wilson as the nighttime nailer because over the last 2 years, someone had been intentionally throwing roofing nails onto local streets, primarily in the early morning hours while it was still dark outside. Some of the thrown nails did cause damage to motorist tires. Luckily, no one was injured." Wilson allegedly admitted to throwing nails onto busy streets, not only in Oregon City, but in other metropolitan locations on over 50 separate occasions. Police say he dumped nails in several locations in Oregon City over the past week alone. The nails have been described by police as roofer's nails or something similar, perfect for popping car tires. Not only are victims forced to incur the expense of repairing or buying new tires, there is the potential that they could lose control of their vehicle and crash, resulting in serious injury or worse. Wilson was lodged at the Clackamas County Jail on 4 counts of second-degree disorderly conduct, but was released on bond later that day. The Oregon City Police Department says they are combining the previous cases together and will be submitting them to the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office for consideration of further charges. The news of the Nail Bandit's early morning capture almost broke the internet, at least in the local area. Mayor Holliday's post alone garnered over 1,400 reactions. The OCPD's announcement was shared almost 600 times. One resident remarked, "I've had to replace 4 tires and had them repaired several times. Ugh, glad he was caught." Others questioned what motivated the nighttime nailer's bizarre, cruel, and potentially dangerous behavior, which is still a mystery. One theory was that perhaps Mr. Wilson owns a tire shop and was just looking to drum up business. Others posited a less rational explanation. In the words of one commentator, "So he finally gets caught and then just comes right out and admits all of it? Including other cities in the metro area? Like, was he an addict needing help?" The commenter continued, "This is as weird as a person with a foot fetish or a paper eater. WTH." It was a busy day for moderators of the Oregon City Chit Chat Facebook group, who had to delete numerous comments threatening bodily harm and retribution. While it's unclear how many of these threats were serious, if any, it does reflect the genuine fear and anxiety the nighttime nailer has inflicted during his reign of terror. One woman shared, "I am not a violent person, but it is easy to want to hurt someone who caused your tire to blow out while you were driving your children down the road. He was intentionally trying to cause harm to others for a very long time. we are lucky that people were not hurt or worse.
Two 71-year-old hikers, missing in the Mount Hood National Forest for almost 24 hours, were located safe and sound by search and rescue teams Wednesday afternoon, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office reported. The hikers, Anna and Suki Jung, were hiking on the Paradise Park Trail Tuesday, but they were separated from their group somehow and never made it back out. The area is made up of steep terrain, dense forest, and many other leading trailheads, making it a challenge for rescue crews to search the area. Even so, volunteers and rescuers with the CCSO, Pacific Northwest Search and Rescue, Washington County Sheriff's Office, Mountain Wave, Portland Mountain Rescue, and others scoured the trail near Rhododendron until the couple was finally found around 1:20 p.m. on Wednesday. The search teams had located some items that belonged to the lost couple, as well as shoe prints in the mud. Searchers finally located them near a riverbed in a very dense forest about a half mile from the roadway. However, due to the rough terrain and steep elevation, it took rescuers hours to bring the couple out of the woods safely. The couple was reportedly cold, but otherwise okay. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office thanked all the volunteers and rescue teams for their dedicated service in locating the lost hikers. For photos, visit our website at canbenowpod.com.
Clackamas Community College is increasing the science capacity of its Oregon City campus with the grand opening of the new expansion of Desjardins Hall. The home of life sciences, environmental science, chemistry, and the water environmental tech programs, CCC students will now be learning about the world around them in state-of-the-art labs and classrooms. The 23,150 square foot addition doubles the current chem lab capacity, accommodating an additional 250 chemistry students per year. This also features science on display both inside and outside. Indoors, the building houses a large bird college, a replica of a beluga whale skeleton, and features a large penicillin model sculpture. Outside, an entire exterior wall's brickwork replicates the DNA of a cougar, CCC's mascot. The community is invited to help celebrate the completion of Desjardins Hall at a grand opening at 4 p.m. on October 11th. There will be a short program, plaque dedication, and refreshments. The college is located at 19600 Malala Avenue, Oregon City. The $25 million project is funded through a bond as well as an $8 million matching grant from the state of Oregon. Desjardins Hall is one of several projects that were part of a $90 million bond voters approved in November 2014 to expand opportunities for students and increase the skilled workforce in the community. For questions about the grand opening, contact Public Information Officer Lori Hall at 503-594-3162 or lori.hall@clackamas.edu.
The body of a Clackamas County man was found Tuesday morning, floating in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Newport. The body was found by United States Coast Guard personnel stationed at Yaquina Bay and later identified as 58-year-old Hong Min Tran of Clackamas. Oregon State Police say Tran's family had reported him overdue from a sailing trip Saturday. His ship, the Kiwanda, was later confirmed to have sunk based on debris the Coast Guard found in the vicinity of Whale Cove near Depot Bay. A total of 8 coordinated searches were attempted before the efforts were ultimately called off on Monday. They included an MH-65 Dolphin air crew from the air facility of Newport, a 47-foot motor lifeboat crew from the Coast Guard station in Depot Bay, and a team from Lincoln County Rescue. The Kiwanda was last seen by a bar tower watchstander at the Coast Guard station of Yaquina Bay at approximately 7 p.m. Saturday in the vicinity of Cape Foulweather with a northerly heading. Investigators say Tran was found wearing a flotation device.
A 38-year-old woman was arrested by Marion County deputies on Sunday for allegedly killing a pet rabbit belonging to a Salem family. Police say the woman refused to identify herself at the time of the arrest and was originally lodged at Marion County Jail as Jane Doe. She was later identified as Chantel Scott, also a Salem resident. The family called police at approximately 11 a.m. Sunday to report chasing a woman from their property, located in the 5600 block on Silverton Road. The caller reported coming home to find one of their family rabbits dead and believed the unknown woman killed the rabbit. Deputies canvassed the area and located Chantel Scott, though it took until Tuesday morning to positively confirm her identity. Scott was charged with one count of first-degree animal abuse and one count of criminal trespassing. She remains in custody at the Marion County Jail, and her initial bail is set at $6,000.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hill's NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. The air is getting cooler, and that means one thing, fall is just around the corner. And for many Canby residents, no fall is complete without a trip to Fir Point Farms for a ride on one of their hay rides, a trip through their pumpkin patch, and of course, one of their world-famous fresh-baked donuts. I'm here with their owner, Jessica Romaine. Hi, Jessica.
Welcome. Hi.
Welcome onto the Canby Now podcast.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the farm and your guys' history with it. You've owned it for 9 years, I believe.
Correct. Yes, we've owned it for 9 years. So basically, Fir Point Farms has been around for 35 years. Mm-hmm. It was the only and first original pumpkin patch around.
Oh, wow.
And it has a lot of history.
Yeah.
We have one of the only nature trails around, where you can hike, and it's got a little fish pond, and it's
cool.
All natural.
I don't think I knew that. That's awesome.
It's really nice. It's all private. It's about 1/4 acre.
Uh-huh.
Basically, Fir Point Farms started off as just produce, and then grew, and then they started, you know, planting flowers, and then they decided that they're going to do a pumpkin patch, and so it just has a lot of history. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Fir Point, one thing I like about Fir Point Farms, sure, it has remained a family farm.
Mm.
You know, we're not commercialized. We purchased Fir Point about 9 years ago. And, you know, we learned a lot. I basically didn't really know what a gravestein apple was. And so I went through the School of Hard Knocks and really started figuring out what I was going to do.
Sure.
And so we started farming, you know, the pumpkins, and I hired somebody to farm everything for us because I wasn't sure.
Yeah. May I ask what your background was before you guys bought the farm?
Yes. So
I don't mean bought the farm like you died. I understand. You're not. I'm just kidding.
Yes. I'm a ghost.
You're right. Well, so, hey, Halloween is coming up as well, right?
No. It is. So basically, you know, we owned a business in Wilsonville.
Okay.
And started it back in 1999 as a bakery.
Oh, okay.
And so we baked all of our own breads and made all fresh ingredients with no preservatives and was more of a healthy concept.
Yeah.
And so we've been there for about 20 years and our lease was up and what happened was Fir Point came up for sale and came on the market, and so we decided that, you know, our lease is up. What a great opportunity to buy 35 acres.
Our lease is up. We're looking for something different. Our last name is Romaine. We might as well do some farming, right?
Exactly. We're 100% green acre farmers.
I love it. That's awesome.
So, you know, we purchased the farm.
Yeah.
We did an extensive remodel.
Hmm.
We gutted the whole entire inside. Redid all the plumbing, electrical, dining.
It still has that very, I mean, it's nice, but it still has that very nice, rustic, lived-in look.
Yes.
I mean, we're here in the dining area, I guess you would
call
it.
Yeah. Yes,
I've never actually been to this part of Fir Point before. I'm always in the store bakery area or out on the farm. But,
exactly. So the first year, we decided since that we make all of our own bread, that we were going to grow our own hard red wheat.
Okay.
So we didn't realize that you can't purchase hard red wheat around here because nobody grows it. It's very difficult. So we went all the way out to Redmond and bought the red wheat and planted it. So we planted about 25 acres of red wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Our yield was about 10.
Oh, gosh.
So we, for the first...
You said it was hard to grow.
It was hard to grow. For the first year and a half, we actually milled. We have a milling room, and so we milled all of our own hard red wheat, and we put it in all of our breads.
Mm-hmm.
And so
What is that word, hard red?
It's called hard red wheat.
And what is significant about that?
I
know less about farming than you did when you started farming, so.
So basically, hard red wheat, it's made for producing breads.
Okay.
So your soft wheat mm-hmm. is made for like your pastas.
Okay.
And so there's two different types of wheat.
Interesting.
And so it was really interesting.
The bread one's harder to grow.
It is. It's exactly, because you need that heat.
Yeah.
You need that extensive heat for it to grow.
Okay.
So we started milling all of our own breads and it was, you know, we started growing from there. And so, you know, basically our whole concept at Fir Point Farms is, you know, a family environment, a safe environment, an environment that people can come and have a healthy lunch, baked goods that are not with that does not have preservatives or chemicals, baked fresh with limited ingredients.
All things you can pronounce.
Exactly, exactly. I always learned a long time ago, if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel fortunate. We're only here because we have the most awesome customers that I could imagine. You know, Cambi, the growth in the customer support that we have through Cambi, Wilsonville, Aurora, Eugene, Portland, it's everywhere, because Fir Point's been around for 40 years.
Yeah. And Cambi loves to support the farmers as much as they can, I feel, and all that stuff you're talking about as far as the natural food and just still stuff that tastes good. I mean, that goes over pretty well around here.
So. Exactly. And so, you know, we have like thousands of beehives on the property, and we... that's the honey that we use for our bread. And so this honey that we use is 100% raw, pure honey.
Yeah.
So you're getting the best of the best.
Yeah.
You know, and my son just recently, he graduated from Oregon State. And so last couple of years, he's taken over all the farming, and his name's Brandon Romaine. And, you know, he learned the hard way. You know, he learned how to work the ground and to plant and to figure out if the soil needed testing. So he, you know, went through the school of hard knocks, but this year...
It works for you guys.
Yes. This year we grew 8 acres of pumpkins. We have over 3,000 pumpkins growing. We have a 6-acre corn maze,
yeah.
A 1-acre corn maze. This year is going to be fun for the kids. We have pumpkin bowling,
wow.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
We have a
so
kids zone.
What is that? Tell me about that new thing, pumpkin bowling. I guess it's just what it sounds like.
So basically, it's just like you go to a bowling alley,
uh-huh.
And it's set up just like a bowling alley. The only difference is you have all your lanes,
uh-huh.
And you roll, instead of a bowling ball, it's a pumpkin.
Okay, real pumpkin. It's not like a bowling ball that looks like a pumpkin.
It's a real pumpkin.
Uh-huh.
And you have your lanes.
Uh-huh.
And so that's going to be really interesting.
I hope there's bumpers. Are there bumpers?
There's bumpers.
Okay, not gutters.
Nope.
Okay, because I live in the gutters. I mean, we're bowling anyway.
Yes.
So.
And so the bumpers actually will be the hay bales.
Oh, cool.
And
that sounds like a ton of fun. Did you guys see that somewhere else? Was that your idea? Or?
Well, you know, it was just an idea that I heard from somebody else,
yeah.
And so I did a little bit of research.
So it sounds like a blast.
It
yeah,
is. It is.
Cool.
And so we're going to focus a little bit more on ages 0 to 8.
Okay.
So we're going to set up a kids zone. And basically what the kids zone's going to be, it's just going to be for that age group.
Yeah.
There's going to be miniature bounce houses, bouncy horses, John Deere trikes.
Mm, awesome.
We're going to do, it's called cow roping.
Okay.
And cow roping is kind of interesting because you really don't get to do it anywhere else unless you're at a farm.
Or at a rodeo.
Or at a rodeo. You know,
yeah.
So that's new this year.
Yeah.
The pumpkin bowling's new this year.
Yeah.
We're going to do a gigantic, like 2,000 square foot play in the hay,
wow.
To where it's all covered and anybody can play in the hay.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So is that like a big pit or like a big pile or?
It's under a structure, an outside structure,
uh-huh.
And it's just open and then so you line your whole area with hay bales,
uh-huh.
And then you put like 100 hay bales inside.
Yeah.
At least 100 or maybe 200.
Yeah.
So when the kids fall in there, they're gonna you know, dip deep down,
right,
you know, they're
right.
Not going to get hurt.
Right, right. And then when, you know, the cows are all done getting roped, that's just their buffet. So.
Exactly. And then after they rope all the cows, they can get on the cow train.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, it's more for families.
Yeah.
So we provide a lot of interesting activities for, you know, people that are on a budget that don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
I always say that every single person's welcome at Fair Point Farms. Mm. It's free parking. The activities that we provide that are free are tetherball, badminton, volleyball, frisbee, corn toss, nut house, Noah's Ark, and play in the hay.
Mm.
And that is all free to anybody that would love to come and and come to Fair Point Farms Harvest Festival.
And also free, everyone's favorite, watch Frankie do terrible at pumpkin bowling.
Yes.
Yes. Just like miss every pin.
So. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Everybody's a winner. Every pumpkin will at least knock down one pin.
Yeah, well that is really cool and really appreciated because, you know, I speak as a parent myself that any little bit, any effort on the part of folks to, you know, make it a little easier on the wallet for the kids, because kids have no idea like what things cost or whatnot. They just are looking for the fun. So that's always appreciated. Thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the best value is we have a $15 wristband.
Okay.
And it includes every single activity all day long.
Cool.
We've got paintball gallery. We have the hay wagon ride. We have a 6-acre corn maze, a 1-acre corn maze. We have the cow trains. We have a gigantic slide. Everything on the property is included in that one-time wristband.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so things kick off this Saturday, right? October 5th?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Off and running, our big, huge harvest festival.
What are the hours?
So our hours will be 9 o'clock to 5.
Okay.
All activities start at 10.
Cool.
We'll have a food court, a beer garden. We will be serving our delicious, fantastic, fresh sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, and then we'll have our homemade apple cider and homemade fresh donuts and Tillamook ice cream.
Yeah.
and carameled apples.
Yeah.
And so we really make it fun and festival. We decorate the whole place.
Sure. Awesome. So you guys are, you know, open throughout the year, different seasons and whatnot, but would you say that the Harvest Festival is kind of your signature, kind of your most popular time, or a little bit what you're known for in these parts anyway?
Absolutely. You know, the Harvest Festival, everybody looks forward to.
Yeah.
It. And, you know, it's been around for so long. And so, you know, since we've owned it, every year I try to, you know, have a new activity,
yeah,
a fun activity, nothing scary. I don't like anything scary. I don't like haunted houses. I don't like dark corn mazes. Everything's fun.
You're going to hate our Halloween episode. It's all ghost story. Anyway.
Yeah, so you know, we just keep it fun.
Fun and family.
Fun and family. And that's what Halloween should be about. You know, is to bring your family. Don't feel like you're being nickeled and dimed.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I don't want to go somewhere and spend all my money and then I can't do anything else, or I can't have a nice lunch.
Right, can't eat.
Exactly. You know,
yeah,
and people are on a budget, especially if you have a family of four.
Yeah, yeah. So, what do you think is your favorite part of the Harvest Fest, personally, for you, Jessica?
You know, mine is absolutely the customers.
Yeah.
I love our customers. You know, I love the little ones coming in their costumes, and the happy faces, and watching, you know, the children pick up pumpkins bigger than themselves.
Yeah, as long as the costumes aren't too scary.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and in fall, I love fall. Fall's my favorite time of year. It just brings, you know, families together.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas. And
yeah,
it just, it's the start of, you know, the holidays for everybody.
Yeah.
I always say.
Yeah, love it. Cool. Well, awesome. Thanks so much for telling us a little bit about what's coming up. We're definitely looking forward to it, and about your history as well. Anything to add before we go?
You know, I just appreciate the community support.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be here without the community, and I love having everybody here, and I want everyone to have a good experience, and that's my goal, is to everybody to leave here with a smile on their face saying, I had a great time at Fir Point Farms Harvest Festival! Woohoo!
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. This was really fun. Look forward to you guys having a great season.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you coming out.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Are you a small business owner, or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome. Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. You know, Halloween will be here before you know it. Heck, the decorations are already in the stores. So I've got a scary good deal for you. DirectLink is offering 50% off their blazing fast internet speeds now through All Hallows Eve. Not only will you get a sweet candy corn of a deal, but every one of their broadband connections comes with unlimited data, free, and that's no trick. So switch to DirectLink to stream and surf as much as you like. Plus, take advantage of free Wi-Fi home networking for 6 months with free installation of commercial-grade Wi-Fi equipment that ensures your entire home has the strongest, most consistent signal in every room. Talk about a treat. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop for blazing fast internet.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. New Orleans has Archie, Peyton, and Eli Manning. Charlotte has Dell, Seth, and some guy named Stephen Curry. Palm Beach has Venus and Serena Williams. Bel Air has Will Smith and Carlton. Every town has their famous sports dynasties, and in Canby, their name is Coleman. It all started with the family patriarch, P.L. Coleman, who along with H.H. Eccles was one of the premier educators in its early years. In addition to Canby schools, Coleman taught at one-room schoolhouses in Maxburg and Mark's Prairie as far back as the 1890s. Both Eccles and Coleman had a heart for molding more than just young minds. In 1911, they opened a night school teaching business to Canby adults. But also like Eccles, P.L. was not just a teacher. He was also a coach, and in 1912 earned the distinction of coaching the first high school baseball team ever fielded by the city of Canby. P.L. eventually moved to Newport, where he served as principal of the public schools for several years before dying in 1926 at the relatively young age of 57. P.L. Coleman had a daughter, Emma, and three sons, Ralph, Glenn, and Ed, but it was only his sons Ralph and Ed who would make their mark on history. Sorry, Glenn. Both would forge their careers in baseball, though they would choose different paths to get there, one as a player, the other as a coach. Born in 1895, Ralph Orville Coley Coleman was born and grew up in Canby. When he graduated Canby High in 1914, he was part of the first graduating class to have attended all 4 years of study in the nascent school district. Another member of his class, which constituted of only 7 pupils total, was Wayne Gurley, future Canby math teacher and longtime coach of the baseball, football, and boys and girls basketball teams. Ralph played basketball at Canby, but it was as a track star at Oregon Agricultural College, later renamed Oregon State University, that he first began to make a name for himself on a larger stage. This was despite being, in the words of the Oregonian, a quote, little chap with a stride which would not attract attention in ordinary circles. Of course, that same newspaper would call him, quote, the fiend of the season when he clocked a 2-minute, 10-second half mile and became a crucial member of the team as a freshman. As a sophomore, he was named team captain. For 2 more years, he thrilled OAC fans with his exploits on the blacktop. Longtime Oregon State University sports fans still talk of his legend. He once ran the 440, the 880, the mile, and the 2 mile, all in the same meet against the University of Oregon. He also set new school records in the mile with his personal best of 4 minutes 20 seconds, a mark that would stand for years to come. Then, something strange happened. His senior year, he decided to try his hand at baseball. Now, this sort of thing is not completely unheard of. Throughout history, a number of teams, even at the major league level, tested the hypothesis of signing track stars with little or no baseball experience to serve primarily as pinch runners and base stealers. But Coley had something else in mind. He wanted to be a pitcher. He quickly established himself as one of the best hurlers in the Aggies' rotation, but his season was cut short when he was commissioned to serve as a first lieutenant for the Army in World War I. After his military service, he returned to Corvallis, where he completed his education in 1919 and accepted his first coaching job at Corvallis High. He also returned to baseball, pitching for the Portland Beavers on summer breaks from college. He fared well enough to be offered a tryout with the Detroit Tigers, but turned it down to become a physical education teacher and head baseball coach at Oregon State. It was a decision that would define his career, as he spent 47 years working for the college, 36 of them as the head coach of the Beavers baseball team. Nicknamed the Silver Fox for his wiles on the baseball diamond and his rugged good looks, Coach Coleman led the Beavers to Northern Division titles in 1940, 51, 52, 58, 62, and 63, and shared titles in 1938 and 42. His 1952 team won the NCAA Western Regional and advanced to the College World Series, where they lost to Duke and Texas. It would be over 50 years before an OSU team would finally return to the College World Series, finally breaking the drought in 2005. Coleman posted a record of 560 wins and 317 losses and retired as the winningest and longest serving head coach in the school's history. Oregon State's Coleman Field, where the Beavers play their home games to this day, was dedicated in his honor. He even coached his little brother. Ed Coleman was a star pitcher at Canby High before following in his brother's footsteps at OSU back when it was still OAC, though he would make his reputation on the baseball diamond, not the track. Considerably bigger than his older brother, standing 6'1" and weighing 185 pounds, he quickly became a standout for the Aggies 9 and was feared by pitchers near and far as a smashing slugger. His blossoming baseball career was endangered in 1926 when he developed arm problems that inhibited his ability to throw. He was moved to right field just to keep him in the lineup. That was when we began to hit like a demon, a sports writer for the Oregonian chronicled in 1928. Then his arm came back, so he plays right field one day and pitches another. That year, Ed signed with the San Francisco Seals to form what some remember as the greatest outfield in minor league history, boasting future major leaguers Smead Jolly and Roy Johnson, along with future Hall of Famer Earl Averill. Ed was not the athlete his brother was, and it had a definite impact on his ability to play the field. A biographer would later quote an unnamed scout who privately admitted, "Ed was no gazelle with a glove." But his bat was as explosive as ever, and it would eventually propel him into the big leagues. He made his debut with the Philadelphia Athletics in 1933 at the age of 32, though he fudged the numbers just a little bit and told the A's he was only 27. He was quickly tabbed as one of the league's rising stars. No less a judge than future Hall of Famer Rogers Hornby offered that, quote, "When it comes to long-distance hitting, Coleman compares with the best in the league, fellows like Lou Gehrig, Al Simmons, Babe Ruth, and Jimmy Fox. He is regarded as the sure shot to bat far over the 300 mark," the Sporting News wrote of Coleman. And indeed, he hit over 340 in 26 games his rookie year. But it wouldn't last. Injuries and a falling out with the A's owner-manager Connie Mack led Coleman to be traded to the St. Louis Browns in 1935. Hornsby himself was the manager of the squad, but he relegated the offensive dynamo to pinch hitter after Coleman reported to spring camp 19 pounds overweight. He hit .292 and had a decent year overall, but he was cut at the end of the season. He spent the next 5 years bouncing around the minor leagues before retiring from organized baseball. In a time when big leaguers were known for their colorful remarks to beat writers, Ed Coleman was rarely quoted. His reputation as a private, soft-spoken man was believed to be the result of a slight speech impediment. Ed contracted a severe illness in 1964 and succumbed on August 5th, 4 months shy of his 63rd birthday. He's buried at Zion Memorial Park in Canby. His brother Ralph died in July of 1990 at a nursing home in Corvallis. He was 94. Up next, we'll bring you the story of Larry Owings, the CHS grad who was the only man to ever beat the greatest wrestler in the history of the sport. But I'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then.
I am not a golfer. I mean, I'm not a good golfer. So when I want to play a few rounds, I head over to Frontier Golf Course. They're a family-owned, family-friendly 9-hole course with beautiful scenery. And they let me rent clubs or bring my own. And they don't judge me for my slices and hacks. Or, you know, my language.
Frontier Golf Course is a great place to meet your buddies and have a drink or bring your kids along. They're located on Holly Street just north of town. If you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
Also, please don't hit the ferry.
Yeah, please don't. But do ask them about Farley the Goat. They love that. Frontier prides itself on being the best value course you'll find in the area. If you haven't been by in a while, you've got to come check out what the new owners have done. Frontier Golf Course, it's a new frontier.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love.
For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Can Be Now podcast, visit canbenowpod.com/plus.